Thank you for listening to a reading presented by the Poetry Center of Chicago. The Poetry Center is an independent, nonprofit arts organization promoting poetry in Chicago through readings, workshops, and arts education. To learn more about the Poetry Center, to read poems by our students in Chicago Public Schools, or to donate, please visit www.poetrycenter.org.
You know, there's a famous and heartbreaking lyric by the great classical Chinese poet Tu Fu entitled To Wee Ba, a Retired Scholar, in which Du Fu tells of a visit to his closest childhood friend. It's been 20 years since the pair last met. Wee Ba has a large family and a bucolic life, while Du Fu is roaming ceaselessly through his war-torn country, has barely the shirt on his back. So there's a beautiful and bittersweet moment at the end of the poem. Du Fu and Wee Ba are sitting in a moonlit garden. They're drinking wine and have a moment of camaraderie and communion that's deeply affecting. And it's made even more affecting when we read the poem's last lines and know this moment must be fleeting. Du Fu says, "Tomorrow, mountain peaks will come between us, and with them the endless, oblivious business of the world." When we talk about diversity, and when we try to wrestle from that word all the jargony connotations that it today possesses, the one thing that has to remain meaningful within that term is something paradoxical. Diversity comes from eliminating the mountain peaks which come between us all, with subduing the volume of the endless, oblivious business of the world, so that those moments of communion which people have with one another can be extended, deepened, and elaborated into dialogue. If diversity means anything, it means to champion aesthetic, cultural, and expressive variety. And we are lucky tonight to have with us three poets who write very differently from one another, but who share a sustained and deeply felt commitment to the lyric possibilities of the language. Mamie Brussenberg was born in Beijing, China, and was raised in Massachusetts. In addition to her latest collection, 4-Year-Old Girl, she has published 5 other collections of verse, including The Heat Bird and Random Possessions, both of which received American Book Awards. She's taught at Brown University, the Naropa Institute, and the Institute for American Art, and lives in New Mexico and in New York City. Her poetry is restless, probing, and always mindful of the intricacies and ravishments of perception. It is a poetry that, in Kathleen Fraser's words, seeks disembodiment, a withdrawal of self-consciousness, emerging of perception and the elemental. And our three poets are going to read in alphabetical order, Maymay, Marilyn, and Arthur. Thank you.
Thank you. Some beautiful, dramatic weather out there. I'm going to read 2 poems from my book, The 4-Year-Old Girl, and then a newer work that is in process. The first one is called Health. It's in 4 parts. Can you hear me? No. The first poem is Health, and it's in 4 parts. It's better. I had some major health problems about 10 years ago, and it made me think about what the body is, and then the continuum between the inside and the outside. And so this poem is called Health. I cut the stem of the amaryllis, and water poured out so suddenly I didn't know what to look at. There's a blur of force at the cut and a white glare on the table before the silhouette coalesces. Light pours out, collapsing the state of the vector of light potential in the flower or arriving. The mirror projection of my camera onto an amaryllis gives it geometry I call social space, in which the ground for physical and etheric bodies photographs. Magic is confusing if outside contains inside, so it is not noticed. Containment that's symbolic, like numbers. Their combinatory power makes order, like your unconscious at the level of food, which is pre-symbolic. As substratum or residue of speech, if she were speaking, her mouth opens out all sorts of presences. Two colors next to each other resonate like presence, the outline of a baby and placenta on a bed of red leaves. Shadows of leaves blur, as if the small body were attached on the underside to the image of a uterus, meaning emotions are abstract. If she's talking about a physical boundary, orange light collects at the horizon like an anatomical drawing, her idea about feeling for a person, the way health is a feeling. He asks you to describe it, showing you the baby. Does it feel like this without the leaves? The form of her body by which she anticipates her power in a dream is light in a tree. It makes the red of leaves. It's a situation in which light hurts her blood. Looking at the blood makes my eyes tear, which should be a grill to look through, a continuum of inattention, not like a blood relation. Herself is constructed of units of meaning not given by nature, but successively constituted by how they're used. The vertical is a woman hanging, uterus between her legs ruffled as a parasol. The horizontal is a lattice of her concentration toward positive emotion, meaning abstract but narrative. Film the woman aging. If you run the film forward or back, you can tell one direction from the other. If you cut the film into frames, you have a stack of events with one-wayness to them, though nothing intrinsic to the stack is equivalent to flowing time. This asymmetry is like another person. Define nature as the greatest point of alienation from spirit. Nature is her dissolution below the threshold of awareness of spirit. An instant cause not separated by time from a person. Her speaking reorders events, giving them a sense of necessity to come. Interpretation depends on subject showing itself as intention or blood relation enmeshed in her, as if the ribcage were social space. Light on the ground as through air onto her blue coat is miscible, not private. You give him the light mesh of your longing, which makes distance blue. It's the same to you if he's red or blue. You create the idea of a baby and photograph it on red leaves, a blur. You photograph the placenta, which dissipates, blue glass feet, your uterus in a jar. Each contains an abstraction of dissolution or flow. As photographs, their spirit. As feet and womb, nature. Even when spirit is not there, you have affection for the form, an outline like heat from a name. And according to my astrology, I'm in a confined, dark space, and they said, he said, don't, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. So these are three dark poems. Kali, this is Kali, K-A-L-I, and she's dark, but it's a dark of both sides. And in it, I wanted to write a poem. I was trying to think about the very, very densest thing and then internalize that dense thing. So I'm going to read six parts of it. First, the beginning, presupposed as a past, goes to ground like a foundation and doubles itself. Then I defy inflection in having this double outside itself. It becomes a name, the black of an eye, a person you fear, but it's not yet in the world or fixed in time. Black means she's unknown by people full of ignorance, since it stands for their ignorance. Figures on a white teapot come alive, white dog attacking a bear for spectators. Its dark color is the density when she substitutes her own gesture, given sense by my compliance. Sense becomes a potential real space, following her like a drift of things. Vertiginous animality tangles in pleated material of my body. An animal mother creates a matter double for her. Its matter is ground, blue to blackness, bare as dread reality. The ghost limb is determined from outside, since it derives from a violent incident, but unified inside by originary structures in the brainstem and limbic system. She stands in front of waves, like a stone on a reflecting surface. The ungroundedness of waves constitutes the violence of sacrifice. A triangle places itself on the sea, sometimes obscuring the woman like a witch's hat. The hat existing in the air on what you see omits what was natural in itself. Fate, an airy image, shakes her from sleep and transforms what you see into a beach of witches. Is realization in matter also required? Because folds in matter might reduplicate folds in her clothes? Now at night preserves itself as a black bird. Form is its principle, a trace in dark of a body which couldn't be sensed. Her being there opens out of her captivity in me to being like swimming. Experience of her shifts like a pronoun or originary transcendence and is specified through some other thing, surface of emergence, motherhood, environment. I means a pronoun for who's speaking, so I cannot mean the witch. The witch relates to I as an index, briefly creating the illusion need doesn't exist. Prayer, undisturbed by clamor, is not dragged in the mud but entrusted to memory. It goes to the ground and disappears. When she threw snow at the bird on the road, it never moved. The pronoun, whiteness, moved downward. She spans a bridge over a human being. She appears black from a distance, the way sky appears blue, but held in your hand is colorless, like larvae or an element of the voice. Use crystals to identify this seed element introduced into my body as if by genetic index. Matter becomes a matter of my expression. A fold in matter relates to the light of memory, the way the fold catches illumination and varies according to the light of day. How does a fold itself determine thin and superimposable depth? The paper fold defining a minimum of depth on our scale, as the image of a pleated fan casts a sense of depth in front of the image of a wall. The cerebral cortex, gray matter, is a large sheet of two-dimensional tissue wadded up to fit in the spherical skull. A room transforms itself into two dimensions, into consciousness, following a line like the proliferation of the symbol for her dark skin. We're made to believe she is the thing per se. She is the picture. I don't care for this artificial layer anymore. Now my mother is dead and dark as the animal's eyes. Her symbol, which has neither sound nor thought of sound, is the word for the thing which I inwardly speak by seeing it, but can't see it and can't say it. Her gown glows like crystal. A light wall lends her refinement and immateriality. Nevertheless, her expressiveness maintains through a place that's neither sensible nor the unity of a synthesis, like stains on patterned cloth around her. The selvage is sprocketed, strip of film, polka dots, her pupils, setting point of view. Love was not a sentiment, because in nature this pattern had no place. In me, nothingness utilized the pattern as a mnemonic aid, but a pattern can change. The animal bleeds on the white dog. Its unity is the collected thoughts and feelings of the spectators. Auto-sentimentality conveys this projection of her internal space onto the arena. Separability applies to abstract matter, not pleats of mass that surround living beings, but veins like a witch in the soul. Pleats hold her like an animal in the dark. We hear rustle away without calling it. It returns from a dark eye, intuited like space at rest, dissolved of every other of time, bad infinity, thought of time. So bad was your luck, though looking, you did not see the woman came as your daughter and bound her feet. The witch, my control like medicine, did not end up as the narrative fold in matter, since this communication stretches indefinitely, absolute achieving potential. When the spectacle reached its climax, a shape glowed blue-violet in the halo of the ionization. Fingernails coated with oil were used for this prophecy. I began to be more interested in narrative, and so then I thought I could write some banal autobiographical narrative, and so I started writing about this family, but it's not my family, so I'm gonna. This is a poem that's newer, and I'd just like to try it. All the wretched images of rejection, abdication, and banality I dwell on. Shame at parties, gossip, etc., may well be true. My mother-in-law says if I want to be happy, think of what others want. We're gathered in her apartment, red velvet couch, red chairs, gold and red tablecloth. I watch her broad back going downstairs. My brother's at the table, gold earrings, red tulip bending toward his glass of tea. His expression of dignity comes from space above his closed eyes and rises into the room. My feeling is dignified by dark above him, though empathy for things missing is just abstract. Windows, doors are not surfaces on which images and data slip around. Look at my family, almost perversely wrong in how they're laid out. No ethos of being together, like cards from a disoriented gambler, which still have a reality that calls for play. I don't see us as individuals, but densities, events, time of day, knowing what others think, attaching to dead relatives through children. The events have no narrative and break off in the present or near ground. I say what you take for granted, in which case, what are the risks of betraying myself, you, or being betrayed? An example is a sudden loss of authority, slapping my child. She falls down. That she's not able at once to resume her position, vacillating, suggests, after all, we're strangers. While this proof is fresh, I understand its meaning. I'm in no danger of altering it. Later, I trust memory and may apply our being strangers all wrong. I know what I was doing, where and how I lived then, like someone else's memories, I believe. There was a gap between event and person at medium range, not speaking directly from perception. Years of wandering could have been averted. The bell rings and a man delivers a dog made of flowers to me. My brother rolls over on his back, tongue out. He ordered the flowers. Our dog, whom the flowers resemble, bites his cuff. I realize relating flowers to our dog is perfectly normal on his part, even though life hasn't turned out as he had hoped. Everyone entering the room exclaims, "So cute!" Except for instructions by phone, the technique of the florist was outside his control. It was part of reality, like Fluffy herself, though blurring with flowers makes her more universal. It's an unstable image in which style carves a difference in potential through which he hopes something will pass for him, but he's exhausted. And I'm upset about picking up my daughter from her dorm at school. She enters in high boots with thick heels and a blue miniskirt, cut out against the linoleum, moving. She bends her knees and lifts an imaginary guitar. Her image has an inside and is experienced from inside. Space before she reacts enables her to store other images by subtracting what relates to me. This produces a blurring, like camera shake. Door, windows are remembered, blurred. I tower above my mother-in-law in my white suit, voluntary, lost. My brother took the photograph in front of her apartment. It merges with the pre-existing context, but was never about my irrelevance dissolving into a context of our life. He climbs into a budding pear tree, face turned to us. He sees my head as continuous with a plane of crocuses and grass, dignifying space above me. My daughter walks over in a silver wig, pearly nails pointing like lines of flight into pink air, twirling, spangling space as a material likeness of her aspiration. She moves the camera a little to the left, to the right. It's a refrain, not territory you mark out or try to find your way back to, afraid at night, or leave. Farewell.
Thank you.